This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It is World Rare Disease Day and it's usually celebrated in February every year. And if it's a leap year, it's celebrated on the 29th, a date that occurs only once in 4 years. Otherwise, it's usually celebrated on the 28th. So to commemorate World Rare Disease Day this year, we will highlight a story of Muha Aziz, who lives with a rare form of brain cancer known as gangliogliomas. Muha, correct me if I'm wrong. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, that's how the doctor pronounced it.
Okay, all right. In the studio with me also, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, and Muha's caregiver, one Muhammad Kusairi, who's actually better known as Achik.
Yes.
Achik has been taking care of or assisting Muha for many years now. So we'll find out their story as well. We're going to start with Dr. Azlina. And how many known rare diseases are there, Dr. Azlina? And do we even know in Malaysia?
Well, across the world, there are more than 7,000 different types of rare disorders, and they range in their rarity. So you can have those that are 1 in 3,000, and they would also be considered as rare. Or you can have 1 in 1,000,000, for example, which would be very rare. But they're all classed under rare disorders. The majority of them affect the children, so they'll show symptoms from birth. Some rare disorders can start slightly later in either early teenage years or in adulthood. The ones that are more commonly known rare disorders, the more common rare disorders are ones like albinism, dwarfism or achondroplasia, also spinal muscular atrophy, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, okay. and all those.
Yeah. Okay, common rare disorders, that's
the
interesting.
The more common rare
yeah.
ones.
I know, right? And you know, back in the day, we really didn't know much about rare diseases. I mean, we've come a long way, haven't we?
For some of the rare diseases, there has been some breakthroughs. So, for example, the majority of them, we do know the genetic causes behind them, but there's a vast many that we are yet to discover the actual causal gene. But with the advancement in technology, now that we have all these latest sequencing, methods that we can use, so you know we're discovering more and more about the genetic causes of these rare disorders as the research proceeds.
Are they usually genetic in nature, or is it the environment?
Most of them have a genetic component. Some are due to other causes. Yeah.
Other causes such as?
Environmental effects or exposure to certain factors.
Okay, then that's more difficult to treat because you don't really
Absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely, yeah. And I guess for the ones that do have a genetic cause, that's very important in terms of diagnosing because perhaps as Muha will share later, the thing about rare disorders is because even the clinicians may not have much familiarity with them.
So the symptoms. Of it.
That's right. So when a person comes to the clinic or they bring their child to the clinic, it takes a long time for them to get a diagnosis. And I think there was a survey done by the Malaysian Rare Disorder Society, an informal survey that was done among the families, and it can take up to 5, 6 or even more years to get a diagnosis. First it's diagnosed as one thing and then they develop other symptoms and they rule out the initial diagnosis. So it's a very long period of uncertainty. And the problem is that the longer it takes for you to get diagnosis, the longer you could potentially get the early intervention. So that's why we're sort of hoping that, if through these sort of programs to create awareness about all these various rare disorders, even the doctors will become a little bit more aware of them and know where to go, if they suspect that the child might have something. Who should they reach out to? Who should they refer the family to? I think that's also very important.
And I cannot imagine how expensive it must be to actually go through that process of diagnosing if it's going to take a long time, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then what more treatment anxiety. After? We'll come to that because I know treatment for rare diseases is costly. Mm. It costs an arm and a leg. And I know recently the government did pull back some amount of I think it was free treatment that was available to some people with rare diseases. I think they've reversed that decision. But still, at that period of time when they actually took it away, I'm sure it would have affected, you know, everybody's daily life.
Yes.
But Muha, share your story with us. When were you diagnosed with gangliogliomas and what is it?
I was diagnosed 10 years ago.
And how old are you now?
I'm 39.
39. Okay. So you were only diagnosed at 29, and
yes.
Gangliogliomas is a rare type of a brain tumor.
And then it's slow progressing. So the effects, actually, I don't really feel some of the effect at, you know, at the time of diagnosis. And it may be starting off while I was having certain symptoms when I was in my teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So, just like what Dr. Azlina said, the journey, it was very long.
How long did it take you? 29, you went to see a doctor?
No, I went to see a doctor when I was 12.
Right. Because?
And I was diagnosed because I was having too frequent fever and also headache. And then they... when I was in my hometown, district hospital, they found out by then when they did some blood tests, and they found out that I have very low calcium. So I still remember this. The doctor was calling the nurses and trying to figure out low calcium is called hypocalcemia or hypercalcemia. That was the first time I heard that. So, and that was also the first time I learned hypo and hyper.
I'm sure they're cleverer now. So did you what? Did they put you on calcium supplements? I mean, it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
They put liquid calcium, which was very interesting because I thought that it was just a simple once injection and you're done. But apparently, calcium is very hot. So when they put, they have to put on it on a machine that will push the calcium slowly. And each and every time the calcium inside my body, I feel all the heat coming out from my mouth, my nose, every single holes that there is.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. It was very fun and interesting.
Fun at 12. What happened after?
And then they sent me to a bigger hospital. And they found that I have hypoparathyroidism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. I still don't know what it is.
That's a lack of thyroid hormones.
That's
am
right.
I correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was told by the conversation between my mother and the doctor, which is I was listening.
How old were you then? When they
13.
13.
13. Okay.
And I was just much. I couldn't pay attention much, and then but I could pick up. They were saying the behind the thyroid. Correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I heard wrongly. And then they said behind the thyroid there are actually four parathyroid glands or something.
So now you had hypothyroidism.
Hypoparathyroid.
Okay, all right.
And they prescribed me with calcium.
Sure.
And vitamin D to help to absorb the calcium. And that was also very interesting, especially if I reminisce now during the Chinese New Year. Apparently, that wasn't supplied then in the government hospital.
What wasn't supplied?
The vitamin D and calcium.
Okay.
The one that I had to take. And if it's Chinese New Year, I remember that my late father would have to work harder, and because by then the pharmacy will be closed for a month,
mm-hmm.
in Kuantan. So we have to, bulan satu, January, my father would have just bought the whole supply for February. Mm. It was very interesting also.
Yeah.
Now, change. Everybody, now it is better.
Okay.
Good.
So from the age of 13, what was life like? You went back, it was all right with the supplements, you were fine?
It didn't help much. And then they begin to wonder why I was having certain symptoms. And then because
fever and headaches again.
Fever and headaches again. And headaches from the morning. When I woke up in the morning, sometimes towards the afternoon, it will go away. Sometimes it will stick throughout the day. And I was very active. Oh, my mom put it as very naughty.
Mm-hmm.
So I will always get into trouble because whenever I try to have some certain game with friend, sometimes the pain is unbearable.
Right.
So I just have got to lie down on the street sometimes, because, you know, kids play on the pavement and all that. So this affect my life, and my mom began to worry. And she seeks second opinion from different hospital. I'm just a son of a mechanic, mm-hmm. so we don't have much. And we come from a very big family. I have 12 siblings.
Wow.
So my father had to work a double job and do a lot of things just to make sure I got the best of the best health care. And then the doctor couldn't find out, because certain time I could hear some sort of strange sound. And that was when I was referred to a psychiatrist.
Oh, dear. They thought you had schizophrenia.
Maybe, or maybe Munchausen syndrome. And they also ruled that out after a few years. Right. And then after nearing my SPM, I started to have difficulty walking. And my vision started to reduce. And then they started to do MRI.
Of the brain.
I did something like a drink, myelogram.
Oh, right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they put some colors mm-hmm. inside of
a
my
dye.
Brain.
Mm-hmm.
A dye. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I remember it's a drink, myelogram.
And then your brain lit up.
Yeah. So they just want to find out what went wrong. And then they said I had cancer. It's not ganglioma yet. And I had to go through all the things, all the normal things like chemotherapy, radiotherapy, hormone therapy. Mm. And at the end of the day, towards my diagnosis of ganglioma, I started to have enough of all this. Mm-hmm. And I defaulted from the hospital.
You decided to not turn up for treatment.
Yes.
And that was the cancer treatment.
Yes.
So it turns out it wasn't cancer.
It is not a cancer. Mm-hmm. It's just a
rare
form of tumour. Mm.
I see. Mm. Yeah, it is a rare type of brain tumour,
yes.
isn't it?
Normally it's non-cancerous. Yeah. Right. It's just a slowly growing. So the cells normally have a checkpoint. Any cell knows how many times it can divide before it stops itself. Yeah. But sometimes there's damage to the DNA or damage to those sort of guardians of those checkpoints that the cell then just continually divides. And that is characteristic of all cancer cells. Also in other types of tissues that also divide uncontrollably but aren't cancerous, don't have cancerous properties as such. And ganglioglioma falls under this category.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and how old were you at this stage? Early 20s?
Early 20s.
20s. Mm. And so you defaulted. You decided, you know, you're not going to do this treatment anymore.
Yes.
And what happened at 29?
That was towards the end. I mean, the 29 when I was got this diagnosis.
Of ganglioglioma?
Yes.
Okay.
And then they say that it's all the thing that doctor said, and I just also said this slow progressing tumor, and they asked me whether I want to opt for operation. But this is something that we had earlier talk about. We had a conversation, something that I regret today, but by then, because of all the other treatment that I've gone through, mm-hmm. I decided not to opt for that. And I regret it today.
Okay. So what you're saying is you should have done the surgery.
Yes.
Is it too late to do it now?
I'm not sure. It's just that now I'm still contemplating whether I should go back or not to go back.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think you know, what Muha is sharing is, you know, perhaps a journey that many people face as well, you know, especially those with rare disorders. They feel so kind of frustrated with the lack of diagnosis and misdiagnosis that, you know, they seek other alternatives, or they just sort of try to manage on their own, you know, mm-hmm. especially those that perhaps there isn't a treatment or drug available. So they just try to cope how they can.
I mean, it took you 17 years from the time, you know, symptoms presented, isn't
yes.
it, at the age of 12?
Yeah, you also had symptoms before 12, right?
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
So before, much earlier.
Yeah, before 12, I was a global developmental delay whereby I have some difficulty in social interaction. Mm-hmm. I was very shy and I don't talk much. not as much as today.
I'm very proud of you. But, you know, I'm just thinking, as a child, if you're shy, I would have just thought, children,
they're
some
shy.
Of them yeah. are shy. You know, it's quite a normal thing, really.
But my mom noticed something was not right, because I was too shy. And I started to have certain issues. When I was 11, something compelled me to consider or to compel me to take my own life. I was suicidal. Mm-hmm. So all this thing made my mom realize that something was not right.
Right, okay. Mm. We'll come back and find out more. We're discussing a rare disease called gangliomas. It is World Rare Disease Day. It's usually celebrated on the last day of February, and 28th being World Rare Disease Day. In the studio with us, Muha Aziz, who is living with gangliomas, and Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist. We'll come back and find out more from Achik, who is actually Muha's caregiver. It's interesting, it took 17 years for Muha to actually be diagnosed with gangliomas, because that's how difficult it is to diagnose rare diseases. And we'll come back and find out more about treatment, if there is treatment at all, up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In the studio with us, our Brainwaves 22nd episode, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist in the studio. Today's spotlight is on rare diseases. Muha Aziz lives with gangliomas. He's currently wheelchair-bound, and in the studio with us also is one Muhammad Kusairi, who's better known as Achik, who looks after Muha. And Muha's just sharing his journey from, you know, the time he was 12, even before that, as you said just now, how symptoms had presented, and only diagnosed with gangliomas at the age of 29. And you're 39 today, so it's been 10 years since the official diagnosis of gangliomas. How did you manage with treatment? So once you got that diagnosis, what happened after that?
I defaulted.
On the treatment. What yes. was the treatment?
They just told me my option there was just to do the operation and then maybe some almost the similar treatment that I had before.
Chemotherapy
and radiotherapy. So maybe that was the big turn off for me.
Yes, because you had been through quite a lot already before.
Yes,
that.
Yes.
Okay. I think it's also what's striking about Muha's story is also that perhaps it could have been caught earlier, yes. right? It's just that he was saying that he feels that the doctors were somehow misled by the earlier calcium deficiency. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, it's surprising that they, because you also had seizures, am I correct?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And it's surprising that they didn't get a brain scan earlier, because it could have been detected, but it wasn't done. And so, you know, sometimes it's also, you know, that's also the difficulty when you're dealing with something that isn't clear cut. It's difficult to know how to approach it. But that is something quite glaring, I think. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, I think, normally take this long to diagnose something as a person as having ganglioglioma. It's just in this particular case, because the brain scan wasn't done earlier, so it wasn't detected earlier. That's why the first time they did the brain scan, they found a growth and they thought it was cancer, right? Yeah.
Well, so, do we have many ganglioglioma patients?
I mean, it's a very rare form, so it's not many. Yeah. Have you met any other individuals living
One.
With...
Uh-huh. One other person?
Yes.
Okay, that you know of?
Yes.
Okay, but there's a high chance that there are people out there who don't know they have it.
That's right, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So schooling life was affected,
yes.
I'm assuming?
I was in Sains Sidungun, but because we are in Pekan Pahang, so my mom at the end of the day had to bring me back. I had a ball in Sains Sidungun.
What is this, Mara?
It's
MRSN?
It's a boarding school. Sekolah
Berasama Penuh. Okay. It's a boarding school.
Boarding school.
Okay.
And I had to go back to my hometown school, Ahmad High School, which is, I had a ball also. and then I go to UITM. I try not to stop my education. Mm-hmm. And my mom and dad, they were very adamant. They tried their level best. Even when I was in UITM Shah Alam, I was doing mass comm at first, and because of my seizures, so it was very hard for my coursemate and even my housemate to handle me. So they had to bring me back, and I went to Kuantan and do public administration, because that was the only course in Mara in Kuantan. So my mom and my dad, they make sure
that you got something in hand.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So you're 39 today. Yes. How do you think you've done?
That is a very interesting question. I'm very happy with everything that I have done. I am now an administrator in Malaysian Rare Disorder Society. And I've done so many things. I tried so many things.
Including radio.
Including radio.
Yes.
One time.
Muha was a presenter on IKIM FM.
Yeah, I was just a guest, okay. Moderator for one program for the disabled. And then I even did landscaping. I went to Tanam Rumput.
Why?
I was just helping a friend and I love it.
Okay. But physically you were able to do it.
I had to challenge myself. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult, but I got help from Acik, from other friends, from my family members. They're all very supportive. And I went through.
Yeah. Come also up to theatre, right?
Yeah.
Ah, you act as well.
I act. I write. And I did folly art.
What's that?
Folly art is actually the art of film making. When you go, this is not here in Malaysia now. Before, yes. But now still using, they're still applying it in all Hollywood movies, whereby all the sound you heard, all the sound effect you heard in the movie, like bone cracking and horse galloping, that is all actually produced by a Foley artist.
And oh, I watched that in a BBC studio.
Yeah.
For their radio dramas.
Yes, radio dramas. Yes. They do that. And we applied that once in a shadow play produced by Masakini Theatre Company by a dear friend of mine, Sabira Sheikh.
Yes.
We both were the Foley artist. And then he jumped in and tinggal I and went into the actor, go to the screen.
You usually don't abandon, but because you've stood by his side, Acik. Tell me that story. How did you meet, Muha and, decided that you wanted to care for this person?
At first, my mom looking for home tuition. Suddenly, Muha got a post about looking for student, I think.
Yes, yes.
So my mom found the advertisement on the inside the lift.
Yes.
So she called him and introduced him to me.
Okay, so you started as a student.
Yes.
And then what happened?
From that, Muha is a... It's really cool teacher, actually. Yeah.
What subject was this, by the way?
He can teach any subjects.
Oh,
yeah, just name it. Okay. So, but I just pick three, like sejarah, English, and also math. Lah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So then how did you decide to be a caregiver after?
At first, when Muha got event or something, he will invite me.
Ask you for
and
help.
Yes.
Right.
At first, and introduced me to NGO, and from that I get to know all the NGO and OKU lah.
Okay, yeah. And so you do this full time. How long have you been a caregiver to Muha?
About 10 years.
So from the age of 29, which is when your official diagnosis came out. Okay. So what sort of, I mean, do you live with Muha and, do you care for him from the house or do you come in every morning and leave in the evening? You know, how
we
does
stay
that
together.
Work? Mm-hmm. Housemate.
Yes, okay. Housemate. And then, but Muha, he cannot see actually. Mm-hmm. So, and he's very fragile.
You know, in my
meaning,
notes,
meaning that
you can't see this, but Muha is pulling a face. So
he is.
Yeah, so
I'm looking at my notes from my producers, and it says Muha is visually challenged and he's wheelchair bound. Mm. And I'm sitting here looking at Muha and saying, I'm sure he's looking at me and he knows exactly what I look like. Because you don't look like you're visually challenged, Muha. How do you know? I mean, you're looking right at me and talking to me.
I follow your voice.
Huh. Okay.
Thanks to theatre.
Yeah, that is the theatrical training, action and reaction.
And look at that, you're looking at me and your eye contact is exactly as someone would speak to me.
Well, maybe because we're at the same eye level. If not, maybe I was looking at something else.
Fair enough. When did you lose your eyesight?
2000 and... Yeah, around that 29.
When you were 29.
Also, yeah, around that time.
And then you became wheelchair bound as well.
Yes.
Okay. So carry on, Achik. I mean, how do you care for Muha every day? And you know, Muha, you're very lucky you have somebody like Achik. I mean, otherwise it would be quite a challenge.
And it's a huge sacrifice as well.
I am very, very lucky because before Achik, I have another student from Pekan. Because when I was in Pekan, I was a guru sandaran tidak terlatih.
What is that? Can you...
A temporary teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Guru Sandaran Tidak Terlatih. Mm-hmm. So I have one student. His name is Nizam.
He's my senior.
Yeah.
Achik senior, actually. Yeah.
Everybody who met me a long time ago, they would call Achik Nizam junior.
I see.
They wouldn't call Achik.
Okay.
But Nizam was also like Achik from the very beginning because they helped me a lot. I need people before the breakthrough of the new gadgets now. It is hard because communication also, I need their help before. Because, of course, by then also there is a screen reader called JAWS. But to be able to operate it, I must go and learn. If here in KL, we must go to MAB.
Malaysian Association of the Blind.
Yes.
Okay.
And I didn't go, and I didn't have chance to do that. So I'm not very, very good in JAWS by then. So it was them, Nizam, Achik, and other friends of theirs, or my friend who will always be there to help me with my email, with my writing, because before this I write for one production house for her TV documentary, mm-hmm. which is aired in RTM1 and RTM2.
Fantastic.
So I need them to do that, mm-hmm. and they will drive me around. They sacrifice their time because they are all still very young.
Very young. Yeah. I was going to ask you, Achik, I mean, how long do you plan to do this? I mean, you are young. You have your whole life ahead of you.
I don't know. Maybe because of his coolest teacher, I think. He allowed me to do whatever I want to do, whatever I want. And I think because he bring me everywhere he go, he bring me and introduce.
You're okay with that.
Many different people.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, I have to ask you this question. Financially, how did the both of you manage?
We try to get as much as we could in doing a lot of different things. That was when I told you and I shared before we even go and tanam rumput. We do whatever we could. And, of course, it's not really... we cannot earn much. But the most important thing, I think that we had fun.
Yeah. Fight.
And we got to learn
and
new
you fight
things.
As well, of course.
Yeah,
you know.
Fight, argument, everything.
Where
almost
is the
like
fun?
Brothers.
Very much like brothers.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Haslina, how do parents take to diagnosis of rare diseases?
As with anything, I think you go through a period of shock, I think, and... it's a very challenging time, especially if it's something that has no treatment and even the doctors say, you know, there's not much we can do, for example. Of course, the one thing that will always cross their mind will be, you know, what is the life expectancy and, you know, how are they going to cope, you know, together with what else is happening in their life. So it's a very difficult time for the parents. And, you know, and as Muha shared, his mother really, I guess it was a mother's instinct, right, that she knew something was wrong because, of course, she had 11 other children. So, you know, she could compare their development and she could sort of see that it wasn't quite going how it would have with her other children. So she knew, unfortunately, it took such a long time to get diagnosed, you know. And by then, as he said, that, you know, he had got so fed up with all the medical intervention that he didn't want to have the surgery anymore. And that has had, you know, a knock-on impact. So it's tough, not just for the parents, but for the whole family, I think, you know. I mean, it must have been quite difficult for your siblings and, you know, for the rest of the family, your grandparents, etc., you know,
I'm always thinking that as parents, you always want to know what causes this.
Mm.
What caused this? Did I in any way contribute to this problem? What causes a rare disease like this, Dr. Aslina?
Many possible reasons. I mean, the ones that have a genetic component, it is due to certain damage in those genes that you have passed on to the child. In other cases, it is not an inherited thing, but it's just something that randomly happens. So in science, we call it a de novo, something new that developed either in the... So the damage to the DNA happened in that particular sperm or in that particular egg that was fertilized. Mm. And so it doesn't have any family history, but it affects the child because the damage is specific to that baby. Mm-hmm. So I think in the case of the gangliogliomas, there isn't a strong family history for it. But there was a study that was done last year and by a group in the US where they gathered about 40 patients. Of course, you know, this being a rare disease, it's quite difficult to get large numbers, but, you know, they managed to get 40. And they, using the latest sort of genetic techniques, they screened the DNA of all these patients, and they found that for about 60% of the patients, they had a mutation or a change in one particular gene known as a BRAF gene. And in the remaining 40%, they found unique changes to that particular individual. So it wasn't that BRAF gene, but there were other genes that were involved. And then there was also a smaller handful where they couldn't detect any changes to the DNA. So it could be some other cause, environmental or something else called epigenetics, meaning it's not a change to the DNA sequence itself, but it's a tag onto the DNA that affects how the DNA works.
It's amazing, isn't it? What's happening on a cell level, on a DNA level. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah. I mean, now
I wish I could go in and watch this happen, you know? We'll come to that stage.
Yeah. I mean, and we're getting to know more and more now as well because of all the advancements in the sequencing and being able to look at the changes in the DNA a lot more closely. So we're able to detect and understand. And the key thing about doing all these genetic studies is that if we know what are the changes that happen, what are the genes that are affected, then perhaps, you know, the whole idea is that, you know, then we can target those areas, those genes. Let's say the damage to that gene has caused that gene to be non-functional, so it can't work. So perhaps the therapy could be that you replace, you know, you develop a drug that can replace that particular, the protein in the cell. If that gene somehow is producing a protein which is acting the way it shouldn't, then maybe you can find a drug that can inhibit the activity. So the very start is to try to see if what are the genetic changes that happen? And that gives us clues as to how we can sort of develop the therapies for the different diseases. And that has been not just what's been done for the gangliogliomas, but for, of course, all types of diseases, mm-hmm. as well as the rare disorders.
Have we made any headway with treatment for ganglioglioma?
In terms of drug, no, but as Muha shared, you know, the common method of treatment is the surgery. They call it resection surgery, I think, whereby they remove that part of the tumour and then they follow it up with chemotherapy and radiotherapy. And that's sort of, I think, also in gangliogliomas, there are different forms. Yes. So there's some that are slow progressing, and then there are others that are a little bit more faster progressing. So once they get the tissue out, then they can do other types of analysis to try to see which stage it is, and coupled with the clinical profile of you know, how the tumor has changed over time, then they can decide what grade it is, and then they will tailor the treatment according to that.
Okay. Yeah. We'll come back very quickly and finish up. We'll find out more about support groups for gangliogliomas and you know, whether or not Muha will change his mind to actually do that surgery. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. If you've just joined us, we're discussing rare diseases, actually. One in particular called gangliomas. Muha Aziz lives with gangliomas. He's currently visually challenged and physically challenged as well. He's wheelchair bound at the moment. Joining us also, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, a neurogeneticist. And also, we were very lucky to have Muha's caregiver with us, Wan Muhammad Kusari, better known as Achik, to share his story as to why he has, you know, dedicated a lot of his life, part of his very young and youthful life, to, you know, caring for Muha. I mean, not everyone, you do realize you're a very lucky man, Muha.
I am.
Terribly blessed, I have to say. Let's come back to you. I mean, Dr. Azlina spoke about the treatment options. Do you think that that is something you would go ahead with? I mean, you, at 39, you say now that you have sort of regretted you didn't do that surgery,
yes,
and follow up with chemo. Do you think you'll ever do it?
I still can't answer that. I still am considering options. But a huge portion of my mind is really, really considering it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're visually challenged now, physically to a certain extent. It is a slow progressing brain tumor. It is going to affect, you know, other functions of your body.
Yes.
Are you going to wait for that to happen before you make a decision, or?
I hope not.
Okay. How do you live every day? I mean, you know, how do you stay positive? How do you tell yourself, you know, I'm going to make the best of today?
I'm lucky because I'm surrounded by love. My mom still called me 3 to 4 times a day. Okay, checking on me.
Bless her.
Yes. So I have support, a very strong support system. This is something that I wish that other person with disabilities or patient will have. I pray for that, so that they have strong support system. So how do I stay positive every day? I live just a day-to-day basis. I don't expect too much. I just try to face whatever challenges ahead. That's it.
You know, you're very active in the rare disorders community with the support group and all of that. How do you play a role in this society?
To be fair, I'm very new to this rare disease society.
Mm-hmm.
I just came in last August. And to be fair also, I came in because I need a job. And a friend from another NGO advised me to contact our president, mm-hmm, Dato' Hatijah Ayub. And now I'm falling in love with Malaysian Rare Disorder Society and Rare Disease Society as a whole. And what I'm trying to do is just to help them. To help them to be... to share their burden, because being an NGO, an organization, it is always two things. The first thing is funding, and the second thing is manpower to get people to do or to execute whatever plan you have. And volunteers, this is something that my friend always say, bless her soul. Volunteer in Bahasa means sukarela, right?
Yep.
So if you expect on volunteer, you will have to depend on their suka and whenever they are rela.
That is true.
Yes. So
yeah, because you do need the support.
Yes.
There are,
yes,
not many achiks around.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot happening on the Rare Disorder Day. Dr. Azlina, you want to go through some of that with us?
That's right. So, there are a number of events that are happening in February. So, the one that's happening on Sunday actually is in conjunction with the Car-Free Sunday that DBKL organises.
Yes.
The MRDS would like to invite everyone to come.
Yes, yes.
Right? It's at the usual location that you can cycle or walk or run or anything.
This
right?
is Sunday the 17th.
This, yes, Sunday. This Sunday.
We are joining, yeah, and we are blessed actually to be given this opportunity by DBKL. We are going to have 2 booths by the stage, and people, we would like to invite everybody to come to our booth. We just want people to know what is rare disease, or in Bahasa, this is just our own term actually, because Dewan Bahasa also don't have specific translation for rare disease, so we call it penyakit jarang jumpa. So that is why our persatuan is Persatuan Penyakit Jarang Jumpa Malaysia, okay, or Malaysian Rare Disorder Society. And there will be 5 genetic counselor from Genetic Counselor Society of Malaysia. We are very blessed also to have them to join us, okay, to help patient, family members who want to have some question and answer there. And also we are going to have a pop quiz according to our bunting, and there will be a special token for public who join.
Okay, fantastic.
And there are also a number of other events. So there's on the 3rd of March, a different society known as the Malaysian Lysosomal Disorders Association. They're doing a run for Rare. It's a 5-kilometer run at the Sunway Medical Center. I think the registration may have already closed, but if anybody would like to come to support, they can. And then also there is a art exhibition,
yes,
happening next week, and this is organized by the We Care Journey, which is an association looking at supporting people with spinal muscular atrophy and other disabilities, and it's called the Art for Small, or SMALL, and that's going to be at the Balai Seni Maybank at Menara Maybank in KL, and they are selling off artwork by individuals with SMA, as well as I think some other artwork by Yusof Gajah and Jane Yap, and also Nicholas Chong. And then one more event, that's a little bit later, that's in May, the 1st of May, and this is, it's called the HKL Run, and that's actually to give support to a number of different societies, the Prader-Willi Syndrome Society.
All rare diseases.
The Lysosomal Disorders again, and then the Malaysian Metabolic Society, and also the Hydrocephalus Society, and that's going to be at the Dataram Merdeka, so if people are interested, they can Google that. I think that's still open for registration, the HKL Run.
Okay. Yeah. Achik, would you have a message for people who should volunteer, the sort of peace you get when you help Muha? How would you encourage people to volunteer to help support people with rare diseases?
Okay, first, less expectation and just do it, don't expect much.
Feel for them.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why they're super relevant.
And respect them, just respect them.
That is a very good point, because one thing, Achik or Nizam or anyone who has been around me and been helping me up till today, they just respect me as who I am. And thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Dr. Azlina, your message.
You know, I think it's a wonderful opportunity to be able to have Muha and, of course, Achi, you know, together with us today. And
Absolute honour, honestly.
Yeah, I first met and heard Muha's story, I think, just last year. And I thought, I have to get him on the show. He has to share his story. And so, you know, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you all very much for joining us today. It's been an eye-opener, honestly. Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, and this World Rare Disease Day, living with ganglioma, Muha Aziz, as well as his caregiver, Achik, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.